Have you ever experienced a dry, itchy scalp or ever wondered why your color isn't lasting as long as your hairdresser promised? Well, unfiltered, mineral-filled water could be the reason why. Did you know hard water is a leading cause of damaged hair and dry, irritated skin? And that about 85% of the United States uses hard water, filled with dissolved minerals and added chlorine. That's where Canopy's new filtered showerhead comes in. Canopy, known for their beauty hacks and reimagined humidifier, has revolutionized the filtered showerhead. Dermatologists recommended this unique three-stage filtration system greatly reduces contaminants and odors in your shower water, leaving you with healthy hair and glowing skin. Best of all, the Canopy filtered showerhead is hassle-free. Installation is a breeze. We put it in, it took like 30 seconds, guys. And its unique quick-release filter replacement feature allows for seamless filter replacement unlike any others on the market. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy filtered showerhead purchase today with Canopy's hassle-free filter subscription. Even better, our listeners can use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Hurry, your hair and skin will thank you.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How is your social battery right now? Mine is at about 50%, and I'll tell you why. I have a tendency to overcommit. I want to help with everything I can possibly help with. I want to do everything I can possibly do. I want to be with people, and I forget that at the end of the day, I am an introvert, and I really need time to recharge and take care of myself. Therapy gives me important tools to do that, to recognize what's going on, to understand my battery and where it is and why it's there and what I can do to recharge. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/pantsuit today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/pantsuit. So that I do not like to spend my time or money in salons when I can help it, but I do enjoy a good manicure, and I especially enjoy spending time with my daughters doing the Olive and June mani system at home, because we can all get a good looking manicure for around $2. We know that the polish won't chip and will last at least a full week. We get to await with anticipation the new colors that come out each season. The girls love being able to add some sparkles or choose whether they want their top coat to be matte or shiny. We just have a really good time together with salon grade tools that are so easily explained so that we can do a really good job taking care of our nails, but do it all from the comfort at home. All the choices of a big salon stored in a basket in my closet for when we're ready to hang out together. The Olive and June mani system is a real game changer. So visit oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/pantsuit for 20% off your first mani system.
The holiday is fast approaching.
And we've brought back Diana Butler Bass to discuss the politics of Thanksgiving and gratitude.
This is Sarah from the left.
And Beth from the right.
You're listening to Pantsuit Politics.
No shouting, no insults, plenty of nuance.
Welcome to another episode of Pantsuit Politics. We are returning from our countrywide travels. We cannot thank Beth and Sarah enough for our presentation at the NCTE, National Conference of Teachers of English. We had such a wonderful time there. And we also have to send a huge thank you to Jackie and the Gettysburg Area Recreational Authority for a fantastic live event. On Saturday night, we had people come from all over, and it was just an incredible conversation. We look forward to sharing with you later this week.
Today, we are going to talk about a little bit of news. Specifically, I know everybody is waiting to hear what Sarah thinks about Nancy Pelosi. So you're going to get that today. We're going to talk a little bit about Theresa May and Brexit, do our gratitude moment, and then we are going to turn to gratitude and the politics of gratitude with a gratitude expert, Diana Butler Bass, and we'll end, as always, with what's on our mind outside of politics.
I love it when people are anxious for my thoughts on something. I don't know if I have any revolutionary thoughts about Nancy Pelosi, I'll be honest. I did really love Alexander Petri's take in the Washington Post on the Nancy Pelosi discussion. Did you get a chance to see it?
I did. I laughed out loud several times, which is unusual for me.
Oh, it's so funny. It's so funny. We'll put it in the show notes. But she's basically like, you know, all her stuff is satire. So it's basically like, listen, I like women. I love women, just not this woman, just not Nancy Pelosi, just not any woman who's actually lived as a human being, made decisions that I could perhaps disagree with. Those women, that's a negative for me on that. And that's how I feel this conversation about Nancy Pelosi is going. It feels like, well, I mean, I really think it's important to have a female leader or to have a really strong leader generally, just not Nancy Pelosi. And to that, I answer, wonderful. Who else do you have in mind? Is there somebody else who stepped up to lead the Democratic Party or to raise money on the level that Nancy Pelosi is capable of raising money or is capable of pushing the Affordable Care Act through a very contentious congressional sessions and protecting it? Like, I'm happy to talk about what we want the future of leadership in the Democratic Party to look like. Talk about it all day long. It's one of my favorite topics. But unless you have somebody else in mind, I don't understand why we're having this conversation. And I do think the media is really into this idea of like, we have all these new female representatives and we're fighting over Nancy Pelosi, the female leader. I think that there's a lot of that angle in this that really makes me angry.
I agree. I think something I said on Patreon is kind of my position about this. You know, Nancy Pelosi does not represent my political philosophy, but I think the reason that she's so demonized by Republicans is because she's very effective.
Mm-hmm.
And she is effective in the way that Mitch McConnell is effective. She mm-hmm. will just get it done. And I think that there are some very broken things about the Senate as a result of Mitch McConnell. And I think some of what Nancy Pelosi did around the Affordable Care Act passage also really broke that process. I also, though, don't see the Republicans changing course. And it is surprising to me that Democrats are pushing for someone who can be a counterweight to Mitch McConnell to not sit in that seat.
I want a strong leader for the party. And I don't think you can make an argument against the fact that Nancy Pelosi is a strong leader. She keeps people in line. She gets the job done. She does the fundraising that's necessary to be the leader. I don't really have a problem with her priorities, and I'm not really sure I understand other people's problems. I guess it's just that she's not far enough left, and people want to move the party further to the left. And I get that. That's fine. But I don't think that, you know, putting a far left progressive at the head of the party is going to do us any favors either. I mean, it's a big tent. You got to make room for everybody.
I think the question is, do people want actual governance to happen? You could install a very far left leader in the House and then have the House pass all kinds of legislation that goes on to die in the Senate.
Yep.
I think with Nancy Pelosi, there is a shot at passing some laws. I think there's a real shot at infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
particularly after the midterm elections. That seems to me to be something that would be a win for both parties. Now, are we allowed to have wins for both parties in this climate? I'm not sure that that's what everybody wants, and maybe that's the problem.
Right. I think that is it. I think that's it. And that makes me so sad because I want to be as Democrats. I don't want us to just say we care about the right things and we fight for the right things. I want to be able to say we accomplish the right things. We make changes that really affect your life, like the Affordable Care Act. And listen, you got to break a few eggs to make a cake. And I don't know. I have no problem. I'm a hardcore pragmatic Democrat, so I have no problem with Nancy Pelosi. I have no problem with angering parts of the Democratic Party because I don't think we're moving forward if some people aren't happy with the direction. I mean, if we're just staying in the same spot, that might make the most people happy, but I don't want to do that. I want to move in a direction. I don't want to move the country in a direction. And inevitably, that's going to make some people angry.
One of the other stories that came out this week that Sarah shared on our social media pages was a story about how few women are in Congress on the Republican side of the aisle. And that connects for me to this story in this way. I think anytime there is such a frenzy to take down a woman in a position like this, lots of other women think, see, what is the point?
Mm-hmm.
It is not a good thing for the country that we have fewer Republican women in Congress than we've had at any point since 1994 now. That's not a good thing for the party. And I think that the treatment of Nancy Pelosi absolutely influences women of all political philosophies in thinking through their own future and ambitions. And what Alexander Petrie does so well in her piece is say, it's not just Nancy Pelosi. You know, mm-hmm. she's writing in this voice of sort of friend to women guy. She says, and it's not that I don't like Kamala Harris or Kirsten Gillibrand or Elizabeth Warren, but there are distinct problems with all three of them. And it's just that's how it goes for women in leadership. Right. And if we want more women in leadership overall, I think we could put a lot of that down.
This raised a lot of the same issues with another story regarding females in leadership happening across the pond in the UK. We have new developments with Brexit. Theresa May has submitted a 585-page draft withdrawal agreement. So they sort of have a handshake with the EU on what the withdrawal from the European Union is going to look like for Britain. And I'm not going to get into the complexities of this agreement. But what I found so fascinating is you have people, the Brexiters in particular, are angry with the specifics of the withdrawal. But again, in much like the Nancy Pelosi situation, it's like, yeah, but which one of you bozos is going to step up and lead? Because none of them want the job either. I felt such sympathy for Theresa May when I was listening to a reporter on NPR say, like, they don't quite have the votes. And even if they do, the problem is nobody else wants the job. So this poor woman is struggling through with really, really difficult task. And all people can do is complain about every single detail of what she's trying to accomplish. As if, again, there's a way to make everybody happy. Of course there isn't. Of course there's not a Brexit agreement that will make the EU and the Brexiters happy.
Well, and even the Brexiters as a group. Because there were so many different motivations for wanting to do that and so many people who wanted to do it but then regretted it but also don't want to revisit the decision because that would mean being – I mean, there is a complex set of interests surrounding this. And switching leaders in the middle of a process like this to me seems to be the worst decision anybody could make.
Well, I don't think they're going to be able to because, again, nobody else is going to step up. Let's bring the heat down a little bit and move into the gratitude section of our show where we talk about what we're thankful for in the country this week. And we have a shared one because it's such an important issue to both of us. And we're so excited to see some movement. And that is that the president has signaled he will support criminal justice reform that many people in Congress have been working for decades. And again, this is maybe a silver lining of Jefferson Beauregard Session getting out of the way.
Yeah, my understanding is that Sessions had been a real obstacle on this issue and that some doors are opening up. Now, you have some people who are digging in about this and not being supportive, but for the most part, I think that enough people will coalesce around these ideas that it will get done. That does not solve the problem we have with incarceration in the United States because so many more people are sitting in state prison than federal prison. But if the federal government could make real movement on this issue, I hope that that could break loose some opportunities in states to do the same as well. And to have Republican leadership on this is just, for me, it's the first act from this administration that I have seen that is really consistent with valuing liberty. And so I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, I think that and the success of the ballot initiative in Florida opening up voting rights to nonviolent felons. Just, I feel like I've seen movement across the board on this issue, bipartisan movement, and it's so encouraging, and I'm so grateful for it.
It is encouraging, and to kind of transition into Thanksgiving mode a little bit, this is so important to me because I think we would be a healthier country if we were a country that embraced forgiveness more mm-hmm. and that embraced moving on. And not that we don't impose accountability, but that we impose accountability commensurate with the act. And then we can move on and we don't sentence people to a lifetime of consequence over one mistake or even a series of mistakes. And so I really appreciate the president's leadership on this. I'm going to go as far as saying I really appreciate Jared Kushner's leadership on this.
Ooh, I'm not there yet. Not there.
There are a whole host of people who've been working very hard on this for a very long time. And I don't have to love everything about every one of those people to say thank you for doing this, because I do think this is the right thing to do.
Next up, we're going to continue our discussion of gratitude and Thanksgiving with Diana Butler Bass.
I recently reorganized my closet and realized that I never need to buy a white blouse or a blue dress again as long as I live. Guys, I have plenty. I did want to add some much neglected color, like pink and yellow, to my closet, and I knew just where to go. Quince always has timeless pieces and a true rainbow of options that can help you build a classic wardrobe no matter the season. It's getting warmer, so I got a soft pink chiffon pleated miniskirt that is so cute, and a really beautiful yellow cashmere tee. It's short-sleeved, it's perfect for the sort of bridge weather we're experiencing right now. And the best part is all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I absolutely love it. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/pantsuit for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/pantsuit to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/pantsuit. Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our Fearless Finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting.
We're finally at my favorite time of year. Spring is here. Summer is just around the corner. We're getting our summer essentials ready, our sunscreen, our emotional support water bottles, our steamy beach reeds. But maybe you would prefer your steamy earbuds. This year, there is a new kind of essential right at your fingertips. Enemies to love, chance encounters, a slow burn, friends that become more. Whatever your favorite romantic trope, Dipsy has a spicy audio story just for you. Dipsy is an app full of hundreds of short and spicy audio stories that bring scenarios to life with immersive soundscapes and realistic characters. You can discover stories about second chance romances and adventurous vacation flings. That's my favorite. Hot and heavy hookups. It can be as heavy or as light as you want it to be. This is what I love about Dipsy. It is a modern approach to romance through high quality, captivating audio fiction that you can listen to in the privacy of your own headphones. For listeners of the show, Dipsy is offering an extended 30-day free trial when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's 30 days of full access for free when you go to dipsystories.com/pantsuit. That's dipsystories.com/pantsuit.
We are so grateful to be back with Diana Butler Bass, author of Grateful, The Transformative Power of Giving Thanks, on this Tuesday before Thanksgiving. Diana has been traveling around the country, really making a pitch for a new way to think about Thanksgiving and how it can help everyone in our country move from anger to really anything but anger, I think we take at this point. Welcome to the show, Diana.
Hey, it's good to be back. I just love what you two do, and I'm grateful to be in conversation with you.
Oh, we're so glad to be here with you.
So I read from your email list this morning, Make America Grateful Again.
Oh, I love that.
And I would love to hear, how is it being received as you talk about Thanksgiving and gratitude in a country that is not in the mood for that?
Well, what's interesting, my book, Grateful, came out in April this past year. And I found that in the spring and the early summer, people did not want to talk about gratitude. I literally had some of the worst experiences presenting that I've ever had in my life. I've had people, I had people walk out on me. I had people spit at me.
What?
I had people yell at me. And this came from, interestingly enough, I mean, I think this will be fascinating for your audience. It came from both sides, as would be expected. Conservatives always are angry at me, you know.
Right.
That's my political stance are pretty public. And so everything I said that was about gratitude got interpreted by, you know, pretty hard right conservatives as being an attack, which it wasn't. But it taught me that right now you could read the phone book and people would interpret it as political. So that was really hard. But the other piece that was hard is being in rooms with progressives. And I will never forget this one time when I was trying to talk about how gratitude as a public practice could heal democracy. And a woman got up and started yelling at me. And she said, "How can you be grateful because there are children in cages at the border?" And she just didn't want to have anything to do with it. And she said, "You know, anger is what's going to get us through this. Don't tell me not to be angry." I've never told people, you know, what to feel. That's not who I am at all. I have talked about toxicity and emotions, you know, that fear is a toxic emotion. We can't sustain it over time and be healthy as individuals or a community. But, you know, if you're going to be angry about something, righteous anger is just fine. But I was talking about gratitude and how gratitude helps us get beyond even that. And there were a lot of progressives who didn't want to hear that. So that was the spring and the summer. But what I have discovered is this fall, despite all the energy that went into the elections, people were more open to a conversation about gratitude. And my sense was, finally, people are really tired and are hoping to find a new way to be together. And they really are beginning to be quite eager to talk about other things, especially things that might heal our hearts and heal our families.
Well, you know, my therapist always says that anger is a cover emotion. You feel angry because you feel something else. You're sad or you're frustrated or you're afraid. And I think that's true in the country. And what I love about your book and what I love about what you're offering is that if you can start to move forward, even a millimeter towards gratitude. And sometimes I think the first step of gratitude is nothing more than recognition, just awareness. Just take a minute and look at the present instead of being anxiety ridden about the future or devastated about the past. What's happening right now? Is there anything that you can recognize right in the present moment to be grateful for? You know, so many of those emotions, I think the anger is covering up is either a regret about the past or a fear about the future. And gratitude is such a good entry point into the moment right now. And I think that's why I really love what you say about Thanksgiving. And I think that's sort of the appeal about Thanksgiving is it is a very, because it centers around one meal and because it is less an entire season, there's not Advent, there's not all these other events surrounding it. It can be a really present moment, mindful moment and event. And so I love that you're really focusing on Thanksgiving and what it can offer to American culture right now.
I actually have always loved Thanksgiving. And over the years, I've been increasingly, you know, sad that it's gotten lost in our cultural holiday calendar, you know, especially as this holiday that we never had before, Black Friday, got basically invented from nothing. And, you know, that has really leached into Thanksgiving. And, you know, poor people or people who are business owners who want to make profit that day, you know, rightfully so. You know, if people are going to shop on Thanksgiving, you want to have your stores open so you can make a little extra money. You can have money for Christmas or whatever it is. So I kind of get it from one angle. But from the other angle, it just seems so terrible that people can't have an entire day off, you know, can't spend the whole day with their families and have that kind of midweek Sabbath. And Thanksgiving to me is so unique. What I didn't know before I wrote the book is there are only 10 countries in the whole world that celebrate Thanksgiving. I think that we may have sort of invented it, and it kind of spread out from us. The Canadians celebrate it as well. The Japanese, I believe the Germans have a Thanksgiving. So it's a lot of countries that were influenced by kind of American ideals post-World War II. But that means that, you know, sort of unique among nations, we invented this day as a day to recognize the abundance of the land that we live on, that we hold this amazing story, which is mostly mythology, but nevertheless is really kind of a beautiful story, that people of different cultures can sit at the same table and share a meal together. That's what the original Thanksgiving story, the deepest beauty of it is that we can be grateful for the gifts of our lives. And we can do that at a feast together. It's really lovely. And it's quite special. And to not ignore it, you know, not rush past it to go Christmas shopping. Also, to one of the things we need to do with it as well is to address the mythology piece, you know, and how Thanksgiving was not true in the way that we present it. And that there really is difficulty around Thanksgiving when we start talking about Native Americans. But I think that if we begin to think about Thanksgiving as a real learning day to understand Native cultures and some of the real problems created by white colonizing, you know, we could reclaim it. And it could be quite beautiful to remember what this is all about and to really have a holiday that celebrates abundance, because we so easily forget that. We act out of scarcity and not abundance. And Thanksgiving reminds us of abundance.
I feel like you just modeled something that would be very valuable at all of our Thanksgiving tables, especially as we start to think about how it's difficult to avoid political discussion. And the two of us certainly would encourage people to have that political discussion. We think it's important to do in our families. But I love how you just said, here is what is good and beautiful about America's contributions around Thanksgiving in the world. And here is what is problematic. And those can both exist together. There's something for everyone here. And it seems to me that that's such a good entry point for advising people on how to have these conversations at their tables. Because if you lead with Thanksgiving is a testament to white colonialism, you're going to lose some folks, right? And if you don't address that, you're going to lose some folks and you're going to miss something important. So for our listeners who are interested in having a deeper discussion at their tables about what we should be thinking about as we gather here, how would you suggest beginning that conversation about the mythology of Thanksgiving?
I saw something online that I found to be kind of fascinating just a couple of days ago, and it was a resource put out by, I believe, some Native American women, and it was called Decolonizing Thanksgiving. As a writer, I hate some of the language that shows up around these kinds of activities. Like, decolonizing to me is not a very pretty word. But I get what they were going for. And I looked at it, you know, even though I was sort of turned off by the title, I looked at it and it was beautiful. What they were doing is they had a whole list of amazing resources and activities that teachers and families could engage, particularly with children, to understand parts of Native culture on the terms that Native peoples would like white people to understand their culture. You know, it did everything from talking about the importance of things like sweetgrass and sage and, you know, sharing some stories about how Native people understood feasting and table fellowship and all these kinds of aspects of Native life. And so those kinds of resources, I'd say, you know, look for those, you know, look for what local tribal peoples in your community, how they celebrate Thanksgiving. how they've incorporated aspects, say if a local tribe has largely become Christian at this point, if there's a church that is mostly a native church, you know, see what they do to celebrate Thanksgiving. Just use it as a great learning opportunity. And I think that there's always room, you know, in holidays. That's one of the great things about holidays. Lots of people are in, you know, sort of interreligious marriages right now. And I have neighbors on every side of me that are Christian Jewish families. And it's so interesting to see them celebrate Christmas and Hanukkah together. And their kids are fluent in both holidays. And so in that same way, you know, all Americans can become fluent in other cultural aspects of holidays. And our children like it. You know, it's easy. It's actually easy to learn. So those are some of the ways that I think about it. But those resources are out there. And I'm sure that you two kind of know about some of those as well, and probably could share them at the end of the program with your listeners.
I think that the focus on Thanksgiving as a sort of center point for the conversation is wonderful, but I think the reality is also that other more incendiary topics will most likely come to many, many people's tables as we sit down and try to exercise gratitude with each other. How do you suggest people deal with the inevitable Kavanaugh conversation or Me Too conversation or Trump conversation or whatever the case may be, when it gets a little hotter? How do we navigate that?
I think that people should come to Thanksgiving this year and just expect that their relatives are going to not behave themselves, because people are full of all kinds of political anxiety right now about what is going on and what has gone on. So one of the things that I'm suggesting to friends, because this has been the question, the one question that has been most often asked of me in the last year, is what am I going to do about Thanksgiving dinner? So I've thought about it quite a bit. The first thing is be prepared and think about whether you're going to be the host or a guest. And whether you're the host or whether you're the guest, it makes a huge difference about how you prepare for Thanksgiving. If you're the host, you have a lot of power in this situation to, in effect, set the table. So in the same way the host thinks about, you know, what china am I going to use? What's the menu going to be? What time are we going to eat? What's the, you know, sort of schedule for food? All of that stuff that a host thinks about. The host also this year has to think about, how can I set the table so that all of my guests feel safe and feel valued? And that is really the job of a person who is in charge of this meal, making sure guests are safe and valued. In thinking through that, there are some funny approaches you could take. I've suggested to people that they create a kind of rules for the Thanksgiving dinner and have a list at each plate. Things like do not fight over light versus dark meat. No arguments over jellied versus whole berry cranberry sauce, you know, and so, you know, have sort of funny rules. But then throw in some serious ones, you know, as well. It's just as a reminder to people how they're supposed to behave at a family feast. And you know, like I said, a lot of people right now have forgotten how to behave, because actually media has taught people how to be mean. And so it's up to a host to remind people how to be civil and gracious and kind and not throw food. Another thing hosts can do is think in advance of conversation starters. One of the conversation starters that I suspect could work really well this Thanksgiving is drawing people's attention to a Thanksgiving in the past that was meaningful to everybody. And so asking people for a memory of their favorite Thanksgiving. And if you get people to kind of go back towards a time when there might have been more agreement in the family, or when grandma was alive, or the time that Aunt so-and-so burned the turkey and they were left without any main dish for the Thanksgiving dinner and they all had to eat hamburgers. You know, if you can remind people of something like that, it draws people together around a shared memory and gives them a longer picture of the family so that whatever's going on now gets put in perspective of that longer story. And I think that could be a really valuable approach. And then finally, you know, I think it's really incumbent upon hosts to have ready at their own mind a story about how much they appreciate the relatives at the table who are now acting terrible. And so if you're a Democrat, for example, think about what you really appreciate about Republicans and something you have learned in the past from a Republican relative that made you think about a political or social issue with more depth, because we all have those stories. And the same is true if you're a Republican. Think about what you really appreciate from your Democratic relatives. And you're going to have to be the person who puts that kind of story on the table, because people won't do it naturally. But if you do it, it's important for a host to, that will change the environment. And hosts can do that.
Listen, y'all, let's be serious. I'm 42 years old. Of course, I take my skincare routine seriously. There are a lot of daily skincare products on the market claiming to help reduce fine lines and wrinkles. But how do you know your products are actually working? Well, Ritual is here for you. They have Hyacera, their once-daily skin supplement, clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. They conducted a clinical study, and it led to a 3.6 times reduction in crow's feet within 90 days as compared to a placebo, and a 2.9 times increase in skin smoothness within 90 days as compared to a placebo. I love taking my Hyacera every day as part of my skincare routine. Instead of just slathering more products on my face, it feels like I'm doing something from the inside out. And their one daily capsule is essenced with soothing vanilla, so it's a very pleasant experience. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
Spring is so tricky because I feel the sun shining, the earth is waking up, and I want fresh, vegetable-forward meals. And I'm running in 75 directions and don't have a lot of kitchen and prep time. Fortunately, Factor is here for me and for you with fresh, never-frozen meals that are chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in 2 minutes. They have a ton of options for us, including keto, protein plus, vegan, veggie, calorie smart, and so many add-ons. If you need help with breakfast or snacks or on-the-go lunches or beverages, Factor is here for you. Every meal I've had from Factor is so well composed, it's so flavorful, the sauces are delicious, and Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. Look for Earth Month Eats badges on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. Head to factormeals.com/pantsuit50 and use code pantsuit50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code PANTSUIT50 at factormeals.com/PANTSUIT50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a double A cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
I love those strategies as you're talking. I'm picturing like a tablecloth that just says, this is a table. It is not Twitter. It is not a CNN panel. It is a table. This, you know, let's think about what we do at a table. I think one of the struggles, and as especially I was listening to your comments about progressives reacting poorly to some of your message and conservatives reacting poorly, I feel on the progressive side of the spectrum, there is a sense, if we talk about gratitude, that that means complacency or acceptance of the status quo.
That's right.
And that everything is too urgent for us to have a moment like that. And on the conservative side, I think when you talk about gratitude as healing, we automatically read criticism in and we say, you know, no one's getting any credit for the things that have been good. And I'm wondering how we can help each other understand that gratitude, we're not saying that you feel gratitude exclusively and that it doesn't mean that we put everything down and we can't still have other emotions. Like, how can gratitude be a piece of your life and maybe the foundation on which other things are built, but not suggesting that anyone stop participating?
Problem is that gratitude, like so much else in American life, has been turned into a zero-sum game. And so if you're grateful for something, then I can't be. Or if I'm grateful for something, it means clearly that I've won and you've lost. And gratitude is not a competition. And that's really how we treat it. If you think about gratitude in relationship to politics, what could happen at Thanksgiving is, you know, in 2016, all your Republican relatives were really happy, and they kind of ground it in the face, you know, of the Democrats who came to dinner that year. And there legitimately is a study showing how people spent less time over Thanksgiving in 2016 if they had to eat with members of their family who were from the opposite political party. And so that is a real scholarly academic study that shows that there were fights essentially over Thanksgiving dinner and that people were using their sense of gratitude for winning as a cudgel against their own relatives. And so this year it could be the opposite, depending upon where you live, you know, with so many Democrats winning. And frankly, I don't want to go to Thanksgiving dinner with anybody in Florida right now. I mean, what a mess that's going to be. Sorry, Florida. That shows that we have a really flawed understanding of gratitude. That gratitude is not my side wins and your side loses.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, gratitude, especially political gratitude, needs to be about the bigger capacities of what it means to be an American. Things like feeling grateful that, I mean, despite it all, oh my gosh, I mean, it's been horrible in some ways to live in these last 2 years, but have you ever seen a time when there have been more people actively and passionately engaged in politics who really care about putting their voice in the public square and convincing their fellow and sister citizens that there's a better way to be American?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is really something to be grateful for. We might not all agree. It might get really ugly and chaotic and noisy, and we could even be tired of it. But the truth of it is more people now are using their voices in more ways to try to engage processes and policies for the future of what it will mean to be American. And that is wonderful.
I love that. I think that's a beautiful note to end on. Thank you so much for coming on here and encouraging us to always, always see the gratitude in the moment. We love the book. If you have not read Grateful, it would be the most perfect exercise if you're flying on the way to Thanksgiving or on the way to see your family or on the way home. So Diana Butler Bass, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, I wish everyone a very happy Thanksgiving, and may this be the beginning of resetting the American Thanksgiving table for the future. We can have more chairs and we can share more food because there's always enough for everyone.
Sarah, what's on your mind outside of politics?
Oh, I'm just so happy to be home. It was fun traveling. We ate a lot of really great food. We also went to see a movie. I'm very excited about seeing movies when I travel. I decided we should go see Widows. It was not best cup of tea.
To put it mildly, I did not enjoy Widows.
I really liked it. It is by Steve McQueen, the director of 12 Years a Slave, Shameless, Hunger. And it was co-screenwritten with Gillian Flynn, who I love. And blockbuster performance by Viola Davis. And I just really thought it was interesting and fresh in a way heist movies usually aren't. And I loved the strong portrayal of female characters, interesting female characters who aren't all good or all bad. I really liked it. I really, really enjoyed it. Beth did not.
I did not enjoy it. It was much darker than I was mentally prepared for. I love a heist movie. I don't need to mess with that formula. I think it works beautifully, and I have a lot of fun in heist movies. And so I was kind of sad that there was never a moment that was like, hooray, ladies, we're going to go do this now. Instead, it was very dark, and it was very kind of depressing to me to think about some of the realities, especially around Chicago politics. Mm-hmm. It was funny because it really centers on this alderman's race. And my sister was just telling me about the intense alderman race in her neighborhood. And I was thinking, gosh, I hope it's not this bleak in my sister's neighborhood. Good grief. It just, to me, it was the characters that I was most interested in learning more about, I feel like I didn't learn more about. I felt like some of the stories that I thought were really interesting threads didn't get followed because it had to stay with this kind of complex and dark, sinister narrative. So it is not a movie that I would choose to see again, for sure.
So now we're back home and we're getting into Thanksgiving mode as everybody else is across the country. Both and I are both hosting Thanksgiving with our families. This is my first time hosting in my new house. I'm really, really excited.
Yes, I spent some time with my computer and my magazines and I pulled out all my recipes. I have a plan now. I have the kind of here's what I'm going to do 3 days out, 2 days out kind of plan. And I am really looking forward to it. I'll put all my recipes in our email this week in case you would like to borrow from my menu.
We hope all of you have a fantastic holiday with your family, and we just wanted to say that we are so incredibly thankful for the community that has been built around Pantsuit Politics. Every email, every message, every time you listen is such a blessing to us, and we wish everyone a happy Thanksgiving. Dylan Garvin produces Pantsuit Politics every week. And thanks for making us sound better and smarter, Dylan.
Elise Knapp is our production assistant, which means we could not live without her scheduling, organization, feedback, and creativity. Thank you so much, Elise.
We couldn't make Pantsuit Politics without support from our listeners. Go to patreon.com/pantsuitpolitics to learn how you can receive more nuance and help make the show better.
Special thanks to our executive producers who have committed to supporting us in a major life-giving way. Tracy Putoff, Tim Miller, Cherry Haas, Sarah's husband Nicholas Holland, and my husband Chad Silvers.
Learn more about our live events that we're involved in and what we're reading each week by signing up for our weekly newsletter at pantsuitpoliticsshow.com.
And connect with us and members of the Pantsuit Politics community by following us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.